You are listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio, where I interview incredible people with a connection to Hirschsprungs disease and other associated conditions, such as IBD, IBS, Crohn's, colitis, and ulcerative colitis. Each week, I bring you a new and exciting interview with people from all walks of life, including charity founders, models, and professional sports people. We go through the ups and downs of having Hirschsprungs with a positive message throughout.
Hello and welcome to episode 118 of Tom's Hirschsprungs podcast. I'm delighted to be joined by this evening by Tony Bertoli. Tony, welcome to the podcast.
Yes, thank you. Thanks for having me.
No, no problem at all. Thank you so much for joining me with this. And again, people may be aware of the surname. We did have your brother James on a few weeks ago to talk about his experience with Hirschsprungs, and we now have your experience as well. You are, of course, brothers, and you both have Hirschsprungs, which is extraordinary. But would you like to take us kind of, I guess, back to the earliest point with Hirschsprungs in your life?
Yeah. So unlike my brother James, who was older or has his complications through many more years, so he has actual memories of this. I do not. So all of my information just comes from my mom and what I know of her recounting. So I really don't have any memory of this. But so I was born in 1989 and right at the tail end of it. So I am not an 80s baby at all, really. Just like literally for 4 days, I was alive in the 80s. So actually 3 days. So to give perspective on that, this is really the beginning of the 90s, right? So the way that the medical system was then was very much geared towards this misogynistic view, which I'm sure that exists still somewhere, and actually it for sure does. But so I lay that foundation because when my mom first noticed that I was having some issues with, you know, the same thing like my brother was talking about, just wasn't going to the bathroom for a few days at a time. My stomach looked ridiculously enlarged because of all the compacted, you know, stool in there. She had a much harder time then convincing doctors that I had an issue. Unlike my brother, who, even though it was only 4.5 years after, they were more aware of the situation. So for me, she said it was absolutely grueling. Like, no doctor or medical professional would listen to her, and she really had to push and push and push to convince someone to look at me that something was actually wrong. So I believe the surgeon that listened is the same one who operated on my brother as well, because it was within, you know, 5 years ish so makes sense, and he already knew. So that he got, I don't want to use the word lucky, but because he had,
yeah, I know you,
worse of a time. Yeah, but yeah. he got lucky in that sense that shouldn't have to push as hard. But yeah, for me, that's what I know. It was, I mean, I was truly on the brink of not surviving at all because she could not convince somebody to look at me. So
wow. I mean, I think that still exists very much today. I mean, I, having now done 118 of these episodes, I have spoken to many mothers who have had children, you know, in the last year or maybe matter of months, who then go to hospitals. And this is not just the American healthcare system, this is also UK healthcare system as well. And they go to doctor or whoever, and they say, you know, this isn't right, this shouldn't be happening, this doesn't look right, I don't know what it is, but, you know, I think there's an issue here. And they get kind of brushed off as overly anxious parents or whatever else is written in the notes, and which is so, it's just, well, rude, I guess, is the first part.
Yeah.
But I think, unfortunately, yeah, you're right. That just does still happen today.
Hopefully not as much. But I mean, I know during that time it was really rough for my mom to really get the point across.
Yeah, most definitely. But it's hopefully through, you know, doing things like this, we can bring more awareness to it so that it doesn't then happen further in the future. But it's, again, I guess one of the things that we'll always have, and the fact that we have a rare condition. And like you said with James, it's probably, again, easier is probably not the right word, but it maybe a little bit easier in the fact that you have it. So at least the surgeon or doctors were aware, I guess.
Yeah, because she got very knowledgeable about it because I had it. So she was expecting that it might happen again with my brother. So she completely laid the foundation first because she had the information up front. Unlike for me, it was completely, you know, a surprise. Like, I mean, how would you plan for that?
I don't think anyone does, but it's like James said, you know, no sort of family history or anything, obviously, apart from you, born a few years before. But again, I get told repeatedly by people that, oh, it's hereditary, or this is going to happen and then this person's going to have it, and it doesn't follow a pattern. That's what makes Hirschsprung's, I think, so difficult. Is it can, like for you and for me, come completely out of the blue, no family history, no stomach issues or anything like that, and then bang, you have Hirschsprung's. But I know you said with your Hirschsprung's, you don't remember a great deal, like a lot of us, because we're babies when a lot of these things are happening.
For 1 year old, so my brain is. You clearly don't remember that far back. Some people can, I think, but.
Well, it's interesting. I think, I don't know if I'm going too deep here, but subconscious, I think, does remember, or certainly retains quite a lot that we don't actually remember. But you said you've had around sort of, is that about 4 to 6 surgeries,
something like that. It wasn't as extensive because I didn't have the complete version like my brother did. So I have about, I think he said it. I want to say it's 40-45% of my colon left. So they didn't have to take out everything. But I did have the full, you know, resection and pull through with the stoma and the bag and everything. I don't remember it personally. I remember James going through it because I was, you know, 4.5-5 years old when he was born. So,
yeah,
like I remember the whole thing with him.
So when he was going through that, did you kind of look at your scars and think, oh, actually, I went through that as well?
I know of it because my mom made us all fully aware of what was happening. You know, I mean, it was pretty obvious. You have this, like, my scar is pretty long. It's kind of the, almost to my side and goes all the way to my belly button. So it's, you know, it's a good chunk. It's like 7 inches or something, 6 inches.
Like halfway across? So sort of from the side halfway across?
Just about.
Decent size? You're going to have a scar, you know, have a proper one.
And it's thick too, because I think they use the same site to do everything. So that, I think that's typical.
Yeah.
You know, they do the initial surgery and reopen that same area over and over.
Yeah. Although I think now, having again spoken to people who've had pull through surgeries, or people who've had children who pull through surgeries, they're a lot smaller than you and I, because I think we would have probably had a similar surgery, because I was 92, so that would have been a few years after you. So I think we're left with massive scars, and everybody else is left with sort of, you know, these nice little neat ones.
Exactly. Well, it's part of you, you know.
It is. It most definitely will be. But if we go back again to sort of childhood with you, and a lot of, I know what kind of said before, a lot of your childhood was very much surrounded by diet and having quite a strict diet, certainly when you were at home anyway. When you were away from home, slightly different.
Correct.
Would you like to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So the same applied to my brother as well, which was way more, he was way more affected by that than I was. Because I still have a good chunk of my colon left. But the strict diet thing was because of the knowledge she gained from the first time around. So my mom was really making sure that at least to the point where we were past the initial healing course of the whole thing, to kind of gear the diet towards a system that is missing parts. So, you don't want to just full on have everything that a normal person eats because your body doesn't process it the same. And skipping ahead to like now, I basically eat anything. And it's fine. Like certain things will affect me at different times. Not like James's story where if I go back to that, where he says, almost every day he has to change what he eats because one thing works perfectly fine, the next day it destroys his body. So I don't have that issue. Although I do go back and forth with spice because sometimes there's just that one day, I don't know, but most of the time it's fine. So the diet thing back when we were kids was to keep our system, regulatory, to just kind of have a form or format of, this is what we're putting in our bodies in the morning, lunch and dinner, and this is what's working. Like we are functioning. We can run outside and play, come back, go to the bathroom normally, quote unquote. And yes, all of that work would then be undone if we went to, let's say, a grandparent's house, because, they're grandparents. So they would always have, ours in particular, would always have the, there's a store called Pavilions out here. They're attached to Vaughn's, which is the main one. Pavilions had this ice cream back then that came in a rectangular box. I remember that vividly because it was not good ice cream, but it was ice cream. So, I didn't get to eat that. So if it was offered, sure. Yeah. But I mean, it's not that we couldn't have any ever. It was just highly regulated. Like soda, all that stuff was a no-no. It has caffeine in it too. So there's that. As a kid, you really shouldn't have stuff like that anyway, but all that sugary stuff I know is not conducive to a good diet anyway, so why offer that when you have this plan that's working? But yes, it got thrown off all the time.
I mean, I guess that's the thing. Were you as much trial and error as James was, or were you a little bit, or was your diet a little bit easier to sort of manage?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't think so, because I still had a good chunk in there left over, so I could still retain nutrients and process things semi-normal. However, bringing up ice cream again, I found out why that was a problem more so than the sugar, was because it is a lactose product. And the surgeon apparently had told my mom that I have a chance of being lactose intolerant, but I was 100% like the entire time since forever. And literally we didn't figure that out as a true fact until, I want to say, 2010.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. So you were, in your 20s by then.
Yep. So I just kept having all of these emergency bathroom visits, and I was attributing it to the disease. but it was in fact a severe lactose intolerance.
Oh my word. So not only are you hit with Hirschsprungs, you're also hit with lactose intolerance as well.
Yeah. And Dave was lucky with that. He does not have that. He can have dairy all day. It's not great for him either to have that in general. So yeah, I think he's switched to like soy milk recently and it's been working better. But yeah, he can just have ice cream and whatever. It doesn't affect him that way.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you kind of, but then it would make sense that sort of attributing the lactose intolerance to, well, that's just by Hirschsprungs or whatever it might be, which makes complete sense, you know, because how would you know? Just wouldn't.
Exactly.
How did you find out in the end?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job, she was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy, but every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movements and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
My mom had an inkling of that being the case. And then over time, about, you know, whatever I ate would just send me straight to the bathroom. So she figured it out. She's like, you know what? I really think he's lactose intolerant. So I tested using, you know, lactase enzymes or just milk that has it in it already, like Fairlife, stuff like that. And yeah, no problem.
Fun. But again, parental instincts. Always trust parental instincts. I think that's one thing I've learned in the last couple of years doing this. Is that it's
for these medical things.
Oh yeah, yeah. Parents pick up on way more than we realize. Way more. So it's lactose intolerant. You have Hirschsprungs. I know we'll sort of bounce around as well, but you also have two other conditions as well. So, I mean, when it came to handing out luck, you didn't exactly get the best luck of the draw. So you also, on top of this, on top of being lactose intolerant, on top of having Hirschsprungs, you also have type 1 diabetes and also Hashimoto's,
yep.
Which I'm aware of this as well, because two members of my family, one member of my family has type 1 Hirschsprungs, one member of my family has Hashimoto. So this is something I'm also very aware of. But for people who are unaware of, let's start with Hashimoto's. That's probably the hardest one.
Sure. Yeah. So that actually came about because of diabetes. That is very common with people with diabetes. essentially, it's a thyroid disease where it destroys how it functions and makes it not produce enough of the hormone that you need to have the regulated metabolism. So it's essentially hypothyroidism. So you have a underactive thyroid, and when they that only came about because of a routine doctor's visit, the blood tests, and my thyroid levels were not great. So they had an ultrasound, and again, those technicians can't diagnose anything. She said that. She's like, okay, I can't obviously diagnose this, but your thyroid looks like Swiss cheese.
which isn't a diagnosis, but it kind of is.
Yeah, that's not normal. It shouldn't look like Swiss cheese. So, yeah, because of that, I've been taking Synthroid or the generic levothyroxine for quite a few years now.
Wow. And how does that affect your Hirschsprungs at all, or are they just completely separate from one another?
No, it's just annoying because you have to take a pill every day. And you can't eat for about an hour after you take it. Well, it's within 30 minutes to an hour after taking the hormones. Yes. So, which, being a diabetic, and if you wake up low or something, and you have to have something to bring your sugar back up, there's a relationship there. Because I think if you eat or drink something before it has time to activate, it just kind of doesn't work. So that pill was a wash.
Wow. So there's a lot of organization then in your loss. A lot of organization.
Yes, there is.
Wow. So again, if you touch on what you just brought up there with diabetes, obviously it's type 1, type 2. Type 2 being the more sort of weight, I guess, control one. Type 1 tends again to be just complete bad luck, from what I understand, from what my brother's had type 1 diabetes for the last, well, since he was 11, he's now 32, so yeah, last 20 years or so. Knowing what I know from him, again, just seems complete bad luck. But I guess that was the same for you too.
Yeah, and I get it manifested super late, literally the week of my 27th birthday.
Oh, how nice. Happy birthday here's type 1 diabetes.
Exactly. It was a weird experience for that one because, yes, I have Hirschsprungs. I didn't have diabetes at the time. However, I treated my body as if it was younger than it was, I suppose. Well, I mean, I was still young. Under 30 is you're pretty resilient. I mean, even 30 is not that bad. But it came about because one day I was at work. I was on site for a client, got my normal lunch, which at that time I had walked to Del Taco. And I just got, a lot, actually. It was just a heavy carb meal. But then protein too, but burritos, chicken quesadillas, that kind of stuff, and a regular soda. And I had all of that for lunch. And after I'd eaten that, it's weird to describe this feeling, but I'm sure at that point my blood sugar was probably in the 500s, which is why this happened, because I was looking at my computer at the desk, and I just, it looked like behind me, kind of a Star Force. You kind of get these little starry tunnel vision thingy going on. And then it felt like a hot flash at the same time. And I was like, why do I feel like this? This is very, I've never felt that before. Like the closest I got was like going to a theme park and taking, a roller coaster and those toilet bowls, as they're called, where it goes to the side and whips around a few times. Like I've done that, and you're about to pass out and see stars for a second. It's kind of that feeling with the addition of being hot. And then your whole body gets kind of tight, like all your muscles tighten up. Like it just released massive amount of lactic acid from, you know, working out. You know, if anyone knows, if you've worked out to failure before, like, and you can't move your arms anymore because you just did that one more bicep curl, it's that feeling that your entire musculature. And then every 20 minutes, like clockwork, I had to pee. Just every, like exactly 20 minutes. Yeah, and I had to call my doctor. Yeah,
classic, exactly. Like one diabetes sign.
Yep. I called my doctor and they told me to come in as soon as possible. And before I knew what was going on, they did a blood test to see what it was. And then they're like, have you ever had diabetes before? Or know anyone in your family with diabetes? I'm like, oh, so it is diabetes. But at the time they weren't sure which one, because it didn't make sense. Again, I was 27. So why would I have type 1 diabetes at 27? It was very late. So they gave me metformin for a week and it didn't do anything at all. So they're like, yeah, it's type 1.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
Imagine every day clients walk into your office with their concerns about intimacy, identity, desire, and trauma. Questions that require more than basic training. Emotional and sexual dynamics are evolving, and today's professionals must evolve with them. We hear from parents unable to start conversations with their children around identity. Too often, adolescents have learned their sexual ideas from the internet. Couples have difficulty communicating about sex with each other. At the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, you can gain the specialized skills and knowledge to address those issues with confidence. Whether you are a therapist, coach, educator, or other healthcare professional, our advanced certifications and PhD program empower you to become a highly skilled, sought-after sex therapist. Expand your expertise. Elevate your earning potential. Start your journey today with the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Imagine making a difference in our world. Learn more at clinicalsexologyphd.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
So that's another condition to contend with. And again, I mean,
that's the more annoying ones.
Yeah, I don't know necessarily when type 1 is supposed to be diagnosed. I don't know what a sort of right age to have it is.
Usually it's congenital. Like you are literally born with it. It's an autoimmune issue.
Yes.
So it's supposed to manifest in your, you know, toddler's age or younger. That's normal. Like
almost 27. Young.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Just lived my almost entire life up to that point with normal.
And then bang, hit with Hashimoto's, Hirschsprung's. And again, kind of same question with Hashimoto's in relation to Hirschsprung's. Type 1 diabetes and Hirschsprung's, in terms of their relation, when you were then diagnosed, did you then have to think a little bit more about certain diets did anything else change at that point in your relation to Hirschsprung's and lactose and Hashimoto's and everything else you had?
I know. Well, the Hashimoto's came later, but The Hirschsprungs, no. That's always kind of in the back of my mind. Because, again, my system functions how it functions. And with the lactose gone or controlled, you know, I know how my body works with that or without it. The main thing that happened was I was, you know, drinking normal sodas and like sweetened coffee and stuff. When I heard the news, my brain like had a switch. It was just like, sweet coffee is terrible. Like I still don't like sweet coffee. I just have just straight coffee. If anything, a little half and half in there, nothing else. Which, by the way, I know half and half has lactose, but for some reason it doesn't do anything if I have it with coffee. It depends on the type of dairy that I eat. I don't know. It's weird. Butter, same thing. Like, doesn't really do too much unless I have like a whole stick, which, yeah. But I don't have. Right. Yeah. In terms of the relation there, it not really a factor. It's right now, and since diagnosis, I am in full caring about diabetes mode because you have to. I have to watch everything. I mean, it's like controlled and not controlled at the same time. Like, I don't think this will pick it up, but no, it doesn't. But, so this is what I'm currently at 155, which to some would say, oh my gosh, that's high. My normal is usually above 180, so this is good right now. You can see the graph, right? It's earlier today it was in the 300s.
And for those listening who didn't see the graph, what's the number 155 representing?
So that is my current blood glucose. For a normal human, you should be roughly in the range of 70 to 100 just at any time. Like, if you're really hungry, like when you get you're a little shaky because you haven't eaten in a while, that you're probably closer to 70 as a human. But you have a pancreas and a liver that control that function. Mine doesn't do anything. My liver does sometimes. There's a phenomenon called the dawn phenomenon, I think that's what it's called, where your liver will put sugar into your bloodstream as a backup. So that usually happens when you dip low in your sleep, and your liver will just say, that's not good, so we'll put some sugar in your bloodstream. But unfortunately, when that happens, you usually wake up high because it didn't put the right amount, or it puts too much. And because there's no insulin in your system to counteract it, it's just goes up. So yeah, 155 is a little above where I should be, but it's still technically in the green.
It's good for you then, I guess.
Yeah.
It's not good for anybody else.
Right.
But I think one thing that it's really, really important to point out, again, we've talked about a litany of conditions. And one of the things I really like doing on this podcast is highlighting people who have the condition, but still are able to live, you know, quote unquote, normal lives, have a normal job, you know, achieve really great things. And I mean, you do. I mean, you work in IT, is that right?
Yes. I'm an IT manager for a multi-service provider company.
So you still very much live a, you know, normal kind of office type job. Is that correct?
That's correct.
But I think that even with all of the conditions and all of the complications, I think one of the things that kind of strikes me a lot with people I talk to, especially when they have children with Hirschsprungs, they're very, very unsure of the future. You know, will they be able to, you know, leave the house? Will they be able to hold down a normal job? Will they be able to, you know, play sports? Will they be able to play musical instruments? Whatever it might be. I mean, you've done a lot of those things. I mean, you were, you are very musical. as well. I think that's one thing we'll touch on. When did that sort of love of music start?
Again, from what I am told, it kind of happened naturally. I think I want to say I was like two or three. We'll go back to the grandparents again because they had a piano. I wasn't tall enough to even see the keys on the piano. But she said I would just reach my hands up and just kind of listen for notes that like made sense to me. Like I would start putting them together to like say, oh, that's, yeah, those two notes are nice. And just kind of repeat that process throughout the keyboard, apparently. And then I started having lessons when I was four on piano. And I've at least stuck with that instrument ever since. But I always say piano is a great gateway instrument. Just because of, I mean, you have 88 keys to look at and play. That's a lot of notes. You also are doing technically three things at the same time. You're doing the melody or whatever else in the right hand. You have the left hand supporting that. Then you have your feet doing the pedals. So all of that eventually becomes second nature, but, I also teach piano and I like that as a gateway instrument for anything. So if anyone wants to learn, let's say a saxophone, if you have a piano background, you can kind of like visualize the keyboard in your head while you're playing another instrument. That's just a single line instrument. One key plays one note and it's quote unquote easier. It's not, but, I always liked that fact. And I don't know, I just kind of stuck with it since then. That's an outlet for me. I don't play as much as I'd like to anymore, but it's not gone. Like if I sit down at the piano right now, I could still play everything. Maybe not as well as I did 10 years ago, but you know, it's still in there.
Like driving a car or riding a bike.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. So in terms of, so you play piano and then throughout life, have you played different instruments as well?
Oh, yeah. Middle school was kind of the turning point for me on that one. So, actually, before that would be fifth grade. My elementary school had a band/orchestra thing that one of the more awesome teachers there had decided to take upon himself and start. So he was one of the teachers in the GATE program. I don't know if you know what that is. It's like a gifted student thing. Again, this is not tooting any horns or anything for myself, but I was in that in elementary school. And the main thing that he led was like this kind of logical puzzle type class where I remember these vividly too. They're called stories with holes. So it would be just the story that was missing some key facts in it. And at the end, you have to ask questions that will lead to filling in those gaps. And they have to be logical, you know, it's to help, you know, figure out the story. Anyway, he started a band program, and my mom's a flute player, and she has been forever. And I wanted to play something in there because they didn't have like piano. You had to play a wind instrument. So my mom first taught me the flute a little bit. So that was my foray into single line wind instruments. And then in middle school is really where it took off. Same kind of thing. First year ever at that school having a band program in seventh grade. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to join that. So went in on flute at first and then just hung out there all the time because we had a carpool situation. So we have to wait a lot for our parents to come pick us up. So it was easy to just stay in the band class and I would just open a book. You're like, I'm going to learn trumpet today. So, and just go through the whole book and figure out the fingerings and rinse and repeat, you know, like clarinet, bass clarinet, trombone, all this stuff was just trying it out. And then my love of tuba was born from there, and I got into a marching band in high school on tuba and marched that for 4 years. I also was principal tuba at Cal State Northridge my freshman year of college. So yeah, it's just
fantastic. Again, I've never played a musical instrument in my life. I would never clue how to. But I always marvel at the fact that people can play, especially play more than one. I love it. I absolutely love it. And just while we've got a bit more time just to finish, is
sure.
A story. I know that you told me a little bit about this, about 10th grade and playing a tuba, I believe, at the time. Yes. Would you like to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so that is the actual time that I remember what being in a hospital is, and well, being a patient in a hospital. So, like I mentioned, I was playing tuba in the high school marching band. So every morning we did this, we got there super early, like 5:45 in the morning every day. Probably annoyed all the neighbors in the neighborhood because we would play outside. But and we were 250 people, so it's not quite how. Excuse me. So, just like normal, I got my tuba out, went to the line. You know, we just kind of form a semicircle or a circle around the band director and do our little warm-ups and stuff. I go to put up my tuba on my shoulder, and I felt like my stomach just ripped open. I just could not fathom what the heck I was feeling. So I had to just tell the directors, like, I got to leave the line really quick. You know, I thought maybe I had something bad to eat. So I went to the bathroom. I mean, like, when I say nothing came out, it was like nothing. Like, I felt something kind of move out, but you know, it was more like a pellet, like literally nothing. So then, I tried to come back, and I knew something was definitely wrong. So I went to the nurse, and I was just absolutely writhing in pain at the nurse's office until my mom finally got out of work to come get me. I was at home for one day total in that state. And then it got to the point where I tried to eat like a slice of toast, and it didn't go anywhere. So it just ended up coming back out with, and just, you know, not to get too gross, but it eventually just bile was coming out. There was nothing in my stomach. So made it to the emergency room, and they did a contrast CT, which is awful. If anyone has done that before, the stuff you have to drink is terrible. They also, in my case, had to pump my stomach or something similar. They put an NG tube in, and that process is terrible as well, where you have to drink water while they're shoving the tube from your nose down to your stomach. And yeah, I was in the hospital for a week with a bowel obstruction. So I had to have surgery to fix that. And luckily, the surgeon said that he literally opened me up, like poked it a little bit, and it just straightened out on its own. So he didn't have to go in there and do anything. But the cause was I was dehydrated from the weekend that I spent at a friend's house. And because of that, my intestine got stuck on some scar tissue from my previous surgeries. And that's why when he touched it, it just kind of went whoop, just back to...
Amazing story. Amazing. I mean, I think that is such an important point, though, that because I didn't realize this until much later on in life, that dehydration is so dangerous for people with Hirschsprung's.
Yeah.
Especially, I guess, as well, if you have stomas or a stoma. I guess you then need to take on a lot more fluid. And I didn't realize just how dangerous dehydration could be, but I guess you know firsthand how dangerous dehydration can be.
Diabetes does that too. So I had another incident later where I was a few months after diagnosis. My my then girlfriend, my wife now, had to take me to the hospital in the middle of the night because I was just shivering and could not function. And it happened to just be dehydration again.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's, yeah, again, it's another thing with diabetes, isn't it? Making sure you stay hydrated, and especially with Hirschsprungs as well. But yeah, it's one of those things where it's so important, but it's something that's so easily forgotten, I guess, especially, you know, if you've got work going on and lots of other things. I mean, I'm as guilty as anyone for it when I'm working and doing all sorts, and I'll have a bottle next to me, but I won't look at it for 2 hours and won't touch it for 2 hours or 3 hours. And I think, actually, I'm quite thirsty, you know? And yeah, so I think that's something that's really, really important with Hirschsprungs that I just don't think we think of enough.
No. And again, in my brother's case, it's very serious because he has complete. So there's nothing in there to retain the water.
No,
really. So he has to have just a ton. I mean, he has more than just water. He's got Gatorades and whatever else that just gives a lot of salt.
Yes. Yes, most definitely. But no, thank you ever so much for coming on. It's been an absolute pleasure to chat to you. And just
that was great.
Very quickly before we wrap up, where can people find you on social media?
Right. I do have a website. It's TonyBertoliMusic.com. I forgot about that. Some of my work on there, which does lead to my social media pages as well. But I am on mainly Instagram and TikTok. Instagram is Tony Bertoli Composer, and TikTok is just Tony Bertoli.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Mm-hmm. I can keep up with all of your musical exploits.
Yeah, I need to post more. This will hopefully help me remember. Now that I've been asked where everything is.
Fantastic. Well, thank you ever so much, and I wish you all the very best with your various ailments and obviously music and IT in the future. Thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, of course. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio. You can find me on Facebook under Tom's Hirschsprungs Podcast or Instagram on Tom's_Hirschsprungs_podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll bring you another episode soon.